All right, before we begin today's podcast, spring training is in full swing. It's time to start thinking Yahoo Fantasy Baseball. Crush your league with the Yahoo Fantasy app. Yahoo Fantasy has been rated number one by the FSTA 5 years in a row. Draft, trade, and manage your team right from your phone. Get the expert advice and analysis you need to make moves like a big league GM. Sign up by downloading the app or going to yahoo.com/flagsflyforever. That's yahoo.com/flagsflyforever. Yahoo Fantasy Baseball, the official fantasy game of Major League Baseball.
That's really what's the most interesting thing to me in spring training is those guys that are developing, maybe more so than the guys that have already made it.
Yeah, is there any coincidence that you bought Francisco Mejia for $11 here in this, in this auction? Maybe you know a little something.
November and the waning sun, and all the proofs I'd like to prove, we go down tonight.
Hello and welcome to episode 162 of Flags Fly Forever, a baseball prospectus fantasy podcast. I'm your host, George Bissell. I'm a writer at Baseball Prospectus, and I'm joined by Mike Gianella of the BP Fantasy Team. Mike, how was Arizona?
It was really nice. Some people were complaining about how cold it was because, you know, it didn't get up over 80 degrees. But, you know, if you're from the Northeast like we are, Arizona is nice this time of year.
Yeah, so we're recording this on Tuesday night. It's March 6th. We're in the middle. I don't know if you've started to get any snow yet down there in New Jersey, but we're getting like a foot of snow here tomorrow. So it's doesn't feel like spring training right now, but fortunately we've brought in a guest for today's show who is in Arizona right now. He's down there at spring training. He just came back from a game. He is USA Today Sports Senior Fantasy Editor and the defending champion in both AL and NL labor, Steve Gardner. Steve, thanks for coming on.
Gentlemen, I'm my pleasure to come on, and yeah, I'm Mr. Sunshine because it is still 80 degrees here in Arizona, so life is good, at least for the time being, and then I got to fly home.
Hopefully your flight doesn't get delayed. We were just talking about that, but yeah.
Or maybe it does, and I'll stay out here.
Oh no, not that.
Another game! No, please not.
I'm glad you're having fun. That's all that matters. So Steve is a friend of the pod. We've had him on before. We had him on last year to discuss labor. He went on to win both leagues. So we got to keep the tradition going here about labor.
Why are we doing keeping this tradition going?
Well, it's good for Steve, not for us. I mean, we got to.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We got to cater to our guest and our audience here. Absolutely. So before we talk about labor, just a quick bit of housekeeping here. You can follow all of us on Twitter. Steve is at Steve A. Gardner. Mike is at Mike Gianella. And I am at George Bissell. You can read Mike and I at baseballprospectus.com. Subscribe today with a one-year premium membership. That's how you can get all of our content. We have the fantasy positional series wrapping up, and then we'll get into some more draft specific content coming up in just a little bit later. If you enjoy the podcast, subscribe, rate and review us on iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts from. And without any further delay, Steve, let's dive right into the labor auctions, which are run by USA Today. It's one of the two big industry expert leagues, and we're going to start on the NL side, and just briefly want to let you talk for a moment about Steve Moyer, one of our good friends, who was friends with a lot of people in the industry. Unfortunately, he passed away, and I wanted to get your thoughts on just how you remember Steve and what this league meant to him and what Steve meant to all of us in the industry.
Yeah, Steve was a longtime member in labor and in Tout Wars. I think he started in maybe the third year that labor was in existence, and this year's the 25th anniversary season. So he's been there almost as long as anybody, and he's been a fixture. He's a guy that we have really relied on for his quirky sense of humor. He's a straightforward guy and always opinionated. And he was one of those guys that really electrifies the room, especially on draft night. And so we have such warm feelings for Steve, and it's such a sad thing because it happened so suddenly. And that was one of the things that that made it so difficult for everybody, because we expected to see him out here earlier before we came, before we started drafting, because he usually got here a couple days ahead of time and nobody had heard from him. And it turns out, he passed away in his hotel room. He was on a business trip beforehand. And it was just a stunning thing for us, because, you know, he's such a part of the fabric of labor that it was a huge void there for us. So I want to say personally thanks to Mike for stepping in too. Mike didn't have to draft on the NL side of things. He was already done with the AL labor, and Mike, thanks for stepping in and taking over Steve's spot. And I really appreciate that, because we had a whole bunch of different things to try and take care of, and getting that taken care of by you was a big help.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was happy to help Steve. My flight was until Monday, and I was there already. So, anything I could do to assist, I know it was difficult for everybody. As you said, everybody like really loved Steve and, was fond of him. And, there was definitely a pall on Sunday. It wasn't quite the same. We knew we had to go through with it. I know this sounds like corny or cliche. I think Steve definitely would have wanted us to do this. I mean, he loved, labor.
He sure did. That's most definitely. And so we were happy to be able to get the draft in, and it was a good time.
Yeah, I mean, it's I've always said this entire industry, it's all it feels like one big family when everyone's together for one of these drafts. So our thoughts and prayers obviously are with Steve's family and friends and anyone who he touched. So let's talk about your team specifically on the NL side. Steve, did it feel like you had the target on your back coming into this draft? I feel like Mike's gone through this experience before, but after you win, it feels like everybody starts to take a little bit more interest and pay a little more attention to what you're doing on draft day.
I don't know if I really felt that, to tell you the truth. Mostly before the draft started, I think that's when you get most of the eyeballs on you and people giving you a hard time and everything else. But once you get in the draft room, the players start going up for bids. I don't know that anybody necessarily looked at me more so than anybody else in there. I mean, there's so many heavyweights from the world of fantasy baseball. Eric Carabel, Greg Ambrosius, Derek Carty, Doug Dennis, Jeff Erickson, all those guys. I mean, it's a heck of a lineup. So I don't think that there was really anything different once we got going and got into it.
Did you have sort of a general strategy when you went into it? I know no one likes to get tied down to one specific thing or I'm going to buy one specific player, but did you have just some general thoughts going through your mind as you went into the draft, things that you were looking to accomplish or that you were going to keep it in the forefront as you progressed through the draft?
The interesting thing is that usually in the NL, where we have Doug Dennis and Steve Moyer both, used to go really, really heavy hitting and not spend very much at all on pitching. And so generally, that's kind of what I expect when I go into the NL, is I'm going to look for some pitching bargains and maybe get a good solid base in terms of ratios and strikeouts, and then try and look for some sort of bargains when the market cools off on the hitting. Well, Doug didn't even go all heavy pitching this year or all heavy hitting this year. So it seemed like most of the early bids were on pitchers, and they went at either my bid prices or a little bit more. And I thought I was going to buy pitching going in and work from there. Turned out I did the opposite, and I waited on some pitchers and started building offense. I bought a couple of big hitters that I didn't think I'd end up with on my team this year.
Yeah, could I just to add to that, that's a great point, Steve. I didn't even think of that. I think last year the aggregate pitching salary didn't crack 900. I think it was 894. I don't have it right in front of me. This year I do have it right in front of me. It was 961, which is more typical for you know, these expert leagues. So you're absolutely right. You know, it, I think for people who don't do these, like a $65 difference, you know, is like, yeah, it's not a big deal, but it adds up per team and it really does shift things. And, you know, it's kind of funny, like you and I, like I was looking, like we wound up with similar teams, I think, in the way, you know, we construct it and how we allocate it. Like we didn't get into those big wars for the aces and we kind of cobbled together our staves.
Yep. Exactly. I looked at last year's. I have that. 894, I think, was the total for pitching last year.
That's it. Yep.
And it went, much, much higher. What, 60 some dollars more on pitching.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
It, I thought the one thing, you know, when I got my roster and I started to build guys, I went with Joey Votto. I thought for $32. As my first baseman, you know, some of those guys came out early. I think Goldschmidt came out for a little bit more than that. And I was, well, hey, you know, Votto is a guy that I want. Freddie Freeman went for like 34, Goldschmidt 35, and Votto stalled at 32. So like, okay, I'm happy with that bargain. Corey Seager was another guy, was the second shortstop out. Trey Turner goes for 43 and Seager's only at 25. And it stalled out there. So I got both of those guys and was, you know, feeling pretty good about the way things were off and the start that I had.
I have a question, Steve, regarding two guys that you actually end up buying, but it sort of ties into a larger theme, Mike Moustakas and Alex Cobb. I feel like for a lot of fantasy owners, we haven't really had a situation like this late into spring training where there are still so many unsigned free agents. So how did you approach creating bid limits for those guys where if they sign in the AL, you don't get to keep them, I don't believe.
No, you do not.
So how do you approach those guys and what ultimately led you to buy Moustakas and Cobb? I know they weren't very expensive, but how did that process play out for you?
Well, what happened for me is that as I was filling my roster in, you start to see, you know, the depth dwindle down and some of the guys that are left in terms of what their ceilings are. For my, you know, corner infield spot for Moustakas and what maybe third or fourth starter for Cobb, those guys seem to me to be ones that are worth taking the risk on. And knowing that we have the reserve round, we get six reserves, that it's possible to fill those guys up and maybe get a backup for. So I was looking at, say, if Moustakas is going to be my corner infielder, then I can pick somebody that's a first baseman or a third baseman in the reserve round or later on, or somebody with dual position eligibility that can fill that spot. So it's not like there is one position, you know, like a second baseman and second baseman only, and I have to have somebody that gets into that spot off the free agent wire or off reserve. So at least a little bit of flexibility there. And pitching, same sort of thing. I wasn't going to go too much more than $5. Although we'll talk about that with Mike here in a little bit on the one guy that we got into a bidding war over. But on those guys that I had no idea whether they'd sign in the AL or the NL. Didn't really have any feeling. Haven't heard anything, you know, rumors or anything to that effect yet that gives me, you know, one way or the other feelings. But for those guys, I felt like those were kind of the high upside guys for a low price that you kind of need if you're going to be a team that challenges for the title. And I was willing to take that risk for $5 on Moustakas, $5 for Cobb.
You know, at one point, Jake Arrieta came up and, you know, he was the one player in this limbo who was bid on aggressively. But, you know, funny thing is, it was just Steve and I bidding aggressively. I think it was about eight or so, Steve, and correct me if I'm wrong. I think you said eight and I said nine. And it was one of those spirited wars where we kind of kept going back and forth. I really wanted him and I'm assuming you did, too. And when you had him at 15, I'm like, oh, like I really want him. I really think he's a sign of the National League. But and I pulled the trigger at 16. I think already in the room, people were kind of aghast. I know on the radio they were aghast. And, you know, they brought me in and they kind of said that they said, you know, like, what were you doing here? And on the radio, I said I made a mistake. But I have to say, like, thinking about it now, I think it was a bit of a mistake, but, you know, they were talking about his ability. You know, obviously you and I have faith in Arrieta, or we wouldn't have been bidding, you know, to that level on him. But yeah, I mean, if for some reason he's linked to almost all National League teams right now, but yeah, for some reason the Rangers tomorrow decide, you know what, we're going to pay him, you know, $28 million a year for 5 years, I get nothing.
Yeah, and the thing is, I think it was, I had seven, because I was the odds and you were the evens, and there was, it was a going once, and it was the slow bidding leading up to seven, and then you jumped in at eight, and that was where it sort of took off from there. And I honestly thought that I had him at seven, and I was really psyched about that, because I don't think I'd gotten Cobb yet. I was going to, you know, maybe take the flyer on. And then as you came in and we went back and forth, and I start thinking in my mind, all right, who's been linked to Arrieta? It's the Phillies, the Brewers, yeah, the Nationals. So this guy is, it's a pretty good chance he's going to sign in the National League at some point. And mm-hmm. so that's what was kind of fueling me to keep going. And then it got to one of those, you know, one haymaker, then the other, and you didn't back down. And I went to 15. And when you went to 16, that was the point where I said, okay, maybe at 16, even if he does sign in the National League, it gets to be an iffy kind of value. So that's when I topped out.
Yeah, and especially if he signs with a team like the Phillies, where it's a hitter's park, the defense behind him isn't good, the wins are down. You know, I would say at that price, if he's on the Nationals, that's where you're like, all right, even if he isn't vintage Arrieta, it's a weak division, weak opponents, good lineup behind him, you're buying a lot of wins, you would hope. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And our Bob Nightingale has been saying that for a long time, that Arrieta to the Nationals, you know, Scott Boras client. Nationals on Scott Boras.
Yeah. The other thing I'll add before we leave Arrieta is that, you know, you mentioned it before with your pitching. One reason I chased him, it wasn't just Arrieta, it's that all those premium pitchers were flying off at expensive prices. You know, I had a little regret about Max Scherzer, who went for 38, I believe.
Yep.
And, you know, that was it. It was like, well, now I'm at this point where if I don't even take this gamble on Arrieta, I'm not even going to have a staff. So I'm like, you know what? I think we all gamble in these leagues and make upside plays. And I kind of looked at it like another upside play. Like, you know, Ronald Acuna, another guy I got at 16, you know, he could either start the minors or flame out. You know, what gets lost in these only leagues is sometimes, and I got to admit, I've been really bad at this too. Sometimes you have to make these upside plays and not just kind of go with the middle of the road guys. They're going to, you know, put you in fifth or sixth place.
Well, and that's what I did too last year in the NL, taking Max Scherzer. Remember that finger for the fracture, knuckle, whatever that he had? He was $28 last year in NL labor. And I felt like that he's the kind of guy that can overcome that sort of thing, that he's going to give you the innings once he's fully healthy. And that turned out to be one of the important things in winning this league last year, was having Max Scherzer for $28 and getting, what, $38, $40 or whatever in value that he produced.
Yeah, I mean, that's something we've talked about throughout the offseason, but last week specifically on our starting pitcher previews, just, you know, how valuable those upper echelon starters are because of the volume and the quality of those innings, and that becomes even more of a gap in an NL or an AL only. So I really want to ask you about your pitching staff, because your most expensive pitcher ended up being Felipe Rivero, a closer. So was that, as you alluded to, a byproduct of just the prices on some of the aces, or was that sort of set going in that you were going to try and get someone like Rivero as an elite closer going into the draft?
Yeah, I kind of like to get one top closer and maybe go fishing for a second one or a third one. And Rivero came in there. I have him pretty much on line with Corey Knebel as, you know, number 2-3 in the National League behind Kenley Jansen. So the bidding went up. I was worried that if the pitching prices were up there on starting pitchers, then the closer prices might be as well. And so I think I kind of got him early in the draft. And 18, as it turns out, was even with Knebel and maybe a couple more dollars than Iglesias was. A couple more to Brandon Morrow and Sean Doolittle and those guys. So I might have paid a little bit more than I wanted to, but at least I know I'm going to get a guy who's going to get a lot of strikeouts and it's going to give you pretty darn good ratios, because he was one of the best closers in all baseball last year.
Absolutely. My last question for you, Steve, and then Mike will hit on your team. Victor Robles, we talked about speculative upside plays a moment ago. Mike was talking about that, and Robles is one of my favorites. You got him for $8. How do you envision this playing out? Because the perception right now is that he has sort of an unclear path to playing time in Washington, but now there's some recent news on Adam Eaton. Michael A. Taylor is dealing with some injury issues as well. How do you see this playing out for Robles this season? How excited were you to get him for $8 relative to what some of the prices were on other top prospects in the NL?
Well, he came out really late, and he was one of, I think, one of the very few or the last impact potential guys available in the entire auction. So I think I had three spots to fill, and I may have had $10 or $11 or something like that. So Robles was there. I thought I had him for $6, and somebody bid me to $7. And I went $8, which was my max bid at the time. And because he fit in so nicely, I had the outfield spot. I needed some speed, which is his forte there. And again, an impact player. I looked at some of the other guys too. And this is, you guys, when you're in an auction draft, and you can kind of look at different possible scenarios when you have a little bit of money left. And there was, like, Johan Camargo was a guy I was looking at because he had third base eligibility in case of Moustakas signing in the other league. So I was looking at him and thinking, maybe I can save some money for him. And there were a couple of pitchers, and Robles came up before any of them did. And so I went ahead and jumped on Robles and said, I'm going to regret it. I have a feeling if I don't go that extra dollar and I lose him, and I don't get somebody else. As it turned out, I don't think I would have gotten any of those other guys that I was targeting late. So I did get Robles. Happy with that. And as for how it turns out in Washington, I think Cody Bellinger was a good example last year of a guy that had no place to play. Was the Dodgers were happy keeping him down on the farm. But because he's so good and so talented, when he did get a chance to play, there was no getting him out of the lineup. Not going to say that Robles is going to make that same kind of impact, but I think he can stick if he gets a chance.
Yeah, I'm with you 1,000% there. And as you mentioned, his greatest attribute is speed, which is something that's in short supply league-wide. So definitely a valuable guy to target late. And so really quickly, let's turn our attention now to your team, Mike. And I'll let Steve hammer away at you in a moment here, but because he was actually there to witness this in person. But you bought two guys that I personally am a big fan of. Chris Taylor at $22 and Jimmy Nelson, I think, is a nice speculative play at $3. But I want to get your general impressions of what you thought going in and how this team actually turned out for you, Mike.
Okay, well, to start with, you know, as Steve alluded to before, you know, I was coming in at the 11th hour. And, you know, so with a lot of these auctions, I do some prep work. Like Labor AL, for example, believe it or not, and, you know, Steve, you might laugh at this when we get to the AL, I lowered some of the bids I published because I know how Labor AL plays. It's somewhat conservative compared to home leagues. So I was like, you know, okay, like if I have all these prices super high in the AL, I'm going to buy six players in the first two rounds, you know, wind up sitting there like looking stupid, which almost happened. So in the NL, I didn't have the opportunity to make those adjustments. And, you know, what's kind of interesting about that, though, is I probably would have adjusted to skew the pitching way down, which I don't know if it really would have helped me on Sunday. So I was using very kind of bare bone values, no tweaks. And as a result, you know, what wound up happening was I had the balanced auction, you know, George, that we've talked about before that you've often seen me have. I didn't spend over 24 on a single player. I believe Andrew McCutchen was the most expensive player I had. I spread the wealth. I wound up with a, you know, pretty balanced team. You know, it's a team I think is boring, you know, and people have had this complaint about my auctions before, and I can, you know, particularly if you're a mixed league player primarily or only, I can see why you would look at a team like this and go, oh, you know, why would, you know, you want, you know, this kind of squad. But, you know, we know there's some risk here with Acuna, which I mentioned, and with Michael Conforto, who we didn't mention. But I've got 13 starters on offense and Jose Reyes. You know, they're certainly not all superstars, but it gives me that potential to kind of churn and get points. And, you know, meanwhile, on the pitching side, I got two closers. That's one thing about Labor that didn't change too much in the NL is closers outside of Kenley Jansen slipped a little bit, you know, compared to Tout Wars and CBS and some home leagues we've talked about. And, you know, it's a kind of staff where, yeah, there's some holes. But, you know, the point Steve made earlier about Robles, you know, I feel the same point kind of applies to pitching. And, you know, Steve, you can chime in when I'm done here. And you might agree, given the way you built your staff. I think we put this emphasis on, you know, like expectations and what pitchers are going to do and how they're ranked. And if you don't leave with a pitcher over 20, the thinking is, oh, yeah, you really screwed up. You know, these guys aren't going to save the day. But every year, you know, there's guys we buy for five or six that earn like 20 or 25 and vice versa. I'm not saying that will happen. But, you know, that being said, I think it's possible that this team could be average or above average in pitching. And, you know, it's really funny, the projections that RT Sports use, and I laughed at this, you know, and Steve can tell you when it came up, showed the team I auctioned was in first, which I thought was kind of silly because I didn't have a good feeling for this team at all. But, you know, again, it just shows that there's so much variability coming out of these auctions. We think, oh, you know, we know what's going to happen. We have no idea what's going to happen.
Yep, exactly. And you look for those guys, those upside guys like Julio Teheran for $7. I thought that was a great pick. And the other thing, too, is I think we're seeing a trend now, especially in an only league, where because the ace pitchers and the guys that go 200 innings are getting fewer and fewer in number, you're going to need the guys that you come in there and give you multiple innings and great ratios like the Josh Haders of the world, you know, and the Kyle Barraclaws and you know, get your ratios from your entire staff and not have the fifth or sixth starter who blows up your ratios. You know, get those guys off of your roster and get more of the middle relievers. I think people, you know, instead of maybe having a six starter and three reliever pitching staff, we'll see a lot more teams going with five starters and four relievers throughout the course of the season.
All right. So any final thoughts here on the NL side before we move over to the AL? Was there anyone that you, either of you missed on that you wish you had gotten, or a really nice buy that stands out to you, or just a general piece of advice for people listening to this podcast that maybe they can apply to one of their own leagues? I'll open up the floor here. Probably you can go first, Steve, if you have anything.
Who did I miss? I guess the easiest thing to say is just make sure that you have that roster flexibility, especially in an only league. One of the guys I got late, Ben Zobrist, is, again, as Mike was saying, not a flashy guy, not somebody that you're going to hang your hat on, but at least he gives you the flexibility to where if somebody does get hurt and you know people are going to get hurt, that multi-position guy allows you so many other different avenues to fill that roster spot because you can move others around. And I think because we see a lot more, it seems like, guys playing multiple positions, it's a little bit easier to. But that's one of the things that I like about my team right now.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's why I like Chris Taylor, too, because of the flexibility he does offer you.
Yeah,
so Mike,
yeah, I mean, I agree, Steve. You know, that was part of why I grabbed JP Crawford. You know, it's funny, he's listed short here, but right now in labor, he's third only. But I picked him up thinking, well, he'll have that multi-positional eligibility. I can shift him back and forth. You know, Jose Reyes, you know, same thing. And, you know, it's funny, Reyes was my last player, and I was the first one out. And I took him over Camargo, who you mentioned before, you know, because even though he's a bench player, it was the flexibility and the steals, which I was a little light on. So only leagues are tough in that you really have to try to think three steps ahead. And, you know, I was thinking about flexibility. And the other thing I'd add, you know, I mentioned this about Arrieta before, and you mentioned it with Robles. Don't get locked into, and I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself, don't get locked into this idea that the team, I have to buy the winning team at the auction. Like, Michael Conforto will be back at some point. He will produce. Will he produce $12 worth of stats? I don't know. You know, I hope so. You know, Cunha, I believe, will produce $16 worth of stats. I feel like his stock is kind of going up daily based on the way he's playing, what people are saying about him, even if he's out a month. You know, Arrieta, you know, we know the risk and that could backfire. But overall, it's that idea of, you know, Jimmy Nelson's another one, you know, $3, unless he's out for the season, he should give me something. There's a danger in just buying guys where you're like, yeah, you know, this guy's going to play, he's going to be fine. You do need some players like that. You don't want to populate your entire team with players like that.
All right, so let's move on to the American League side, where this is the occasion, Mike, you were more prepared for this draft, obviously, going in. Steve, you bought two big hitters. You went with Manny Machado for 35, then Jose Abreu at 28. How did you settle on those guys, and are you happy with how the offense turned out overall?
I am happy, and in settling on Manny Machado, I just sort of got into the spirit of things. I don't know. I wasn't planning on buying him, but again, I like the fact that he's going to play shortstop now, so you get that third base and shortstop eligibility in season. I think that was one of those. He may have been the first player that I bought. I think he was. And just knowing that allows me to be a lot more flexible about what I want to do during the course of the draft. And in terms of Abreu, I wanted some sure power. And, you know, I thought in the American League that first base really dropped off considerably after you got past, you know, Jose Abreu and Edwin Encarnacion. The rest of those guys, you know, whether it's Miguel Cabrera, Joey Gallo, Matt Olson, Justin Smoke, I thought there were a lot of question marks, whereas Jose Abreu was rock solid, and we know what we can expect from him. And I was willing to go ahead and pay what it took to get Jose Abreu, and what it took was 28.
That's a great point. That's what stood out to me, the prices on two players you just mentioned, specifically Joey Gallo at 28 and Matt Olson at 20. I never like to call out specific fantasy owners for their strategy or anything like that, but were you surprised at the prices on those two guys, just because there is a lot of risk? And I think when you look at specifically Gallo's price, I mean, he went for as much as Abreu, but I feel like you have to project a pretty high batting average and a step up in power and counting stats to get to that valuation. Did you feel like the prices on those power-centric guys were a little bit higher than you expected?
I'll tell you what, none of that mattered. That was completely draft dynamics that drove Joey Gallo's price up, because we had come back from a break, and I think there were a couple of people in the room that were looking at corner infield spots. They had a corner infield spot to fill, and Joey Gallo was one. Matt Chapman was the other. Those were head and shoulders above everybody else. There was still a lot of money out there, and for us who already had our corner infielders, it was a thing of beauty to watch Joey Gallo go 20 and 22 and 24 and 6 and up to $28 before he was finally sold. That was completely, you know, I think people, if you look at the Labor AL grid in a vacuum, Joey Gallo at 28 would jump out at you if you didn't right. know that that's what happened.
That's what I thought looking at it. I was like, what happened there? But that makes a lot of sense. Crazy stuff happens in auctions. You gotta be ready for it. Mike, let me get your thoughts on your team. We'll stick to the offense here for a moment. You had the most interesting draft of anyone, because you started out with Mike Trout at 42, which I think he was, what, was he the first nomination, or was it Altuve who you
he
also
was,
got at 39?
He was first, and Altuve was third, and in between that was Ohtani.
Yeah, that's quite a
who I did not, I didn't get Ohtani, so right. I did sit out a little bit there, yeah. And then Francisco Lindor was ninth. So three players in, I had spent $114 on three hitters. And, you know, Steve, who I don't know if he's read it, he has the what did you expect to do, you know, what was your plan, you know, little recap that we write for USA Today. My plan was to buy either Kluber, Kimbrel, or Sale, and to maybe buy a second one if the pitching prices fell, and do what I did last year on offense, which was build a balanced roster. That obviously did not happen. You know, Trout, I think that price was fair, but, you know, based on last year, you know, someone, I think it was, or a couple of people, Greg Ambrosius might have said it, you might have said it, Steve, it felt like personality shifted this year. Like in the past, we knew the NFBC squad with Greg and Sean would, you know, go out there and buy a star and spend whatever it took for him. You know, so when I said 42 for Trout, I thought, yeah, these guys are going to say 43, you know, and that's okay. You know, I'll let him go. You know, I'm not, you know me, I don't have to get a star. And I got Trout. I'm like, well, that's fine. You know, he's Mike Trout. And then Altuve was really the shock to me. You know, I thought he'd be the one those guys or Clay Link, who was pushing Altuve last year, would get. You know, remember last year, Steve, you know, Jose Altuve was the guy that half of us in the recap said you know,
I want to build my team around Jose Altuve.
Right. I want to build my team around this big speed, you know, guy who can hit like 330 and, you know, might ding a few home runs. And, you know, has, by the way, been the best player, I think, in AL, no, definitely in AL only, and, you know, maybe in all of fantasy for like three of the last 4 years. And, you know, it gets to 39. Now, I my raw bid on Altuve was 44, but since I had Trout already, if it had got to 41, I probably don't say 42, because I'm like, I get it, he's a bargain, but, you know, having two guys at like $84 is a little much, even if you're playing value. When he's at 38, I just felt like I had to say 39. And Lindor, I have to admit, was, you know, the BP guys are high on him. George loves him. And I had a price on him that was a little bit higher than I probably should have. And Tristan, who was sitting next to me, loves Lindor. You know, I thought I'd maybe soak him at 34. So I got, you know, when I had those three guys at 114, I'm like, all right, well, now I have to readjust. And, you know, Steve, to your point in the NL before, this is where you have to kind of think things through. And what I was thought was, well, I am going to still push on, you know, Kimbrel and Kluber, but I'm not going to push as much. I don't have to get them. If they go for market price or higher, I won't. And I'll figure it out with pitching. And, you know, that's, as you see, looking at my team, you know, that's what happened. I have a low end pitching staff and a team that I think I spent 208 on my offense.
Yeah. And I like Lindor too. I mean, they asked us at USA Today, we're making our preseason awards predictions, and Lindor, he's my AL MVP this season. I think he's going to be that good, and saw him today at the ballpark. He was the leadoff hitter for the Indians, and he hit a home run first time up. So I don't know if that's an omen or anything, but I love Francisco Lindor. He's if I didn't get, you know, Manny Machado and think, you know, maybe my shortstop was taken care of, Lindor I would have been in on. So
speaking of omens and Indians hitters knocking the ball out of the park, Jason Kipnis, Mike, you bought him for 13. Hopefully he's saving some of these for the regular season, right? Like, this is getting insane.
You know what's funny about Kipnis is I have him in the CBS AL League too. I set a price on him of 17 before spring training, and I built some bounce back in, you know, just in the presumption he'd be healthy. We saw him, I think, you weren't there that day, Steve, I don't think. We saw him on Friday in Arizona. He looked healthy. Like, it's the healthiest I've seen him look in 2 or 3 years. Now, that doesn't mean anything. You know, he could, you know, he's an injury-prone player, and I don't want to say injury-prone, but he plays hard. You know, he's kind of a rough-and-tumble guy. He could be hurt in a month, but if he is healthy and if he keeps it together, he's not going to hit 40 home runs, but he could be like a 25-15 guy, which at that price would be great.
Well, and, you know, I talked to him after the game today, in fact, and, you know, one of the things that he said was that when you're not healthy, your days are spent with treatment, rehab, and strengthening whatever's ailing you. And he says he's healthy now, and he's able to spend that kind of time that he would have been in the training room working in the cage and doing everything. So it's no surprise to him. And yeah, talking about people that were naysayers like me, I mean, I had him on one of my bust lists this year. He says that he's one of those guys that things like that will motivate him. And so he says he's in a pretty good place right now.
See, this is the type of stuff you can only get from Steve Gardner on the Flags Fly Forever podcast.
Steve
the insight, talking to the guys in the clubhouse. That's the good stuff.
You know what? Steve was the one I'll never forget. Jose Abreu, before he had played an inning in the major leagues, was like, he's hitting the ball deep. You know, he's like got more power than advertised. And I think a lot of people were skeptical. And Steve was like, yeah, I'm pretty much buying him everywhere. This guy's legit. And Steve was right.
Yep.
That one worked out. That one didn't work out.
Maybe we'll get to your pitching staff in a moment here, Steve, but I want to ask you, what are some of the things that you do look for when you're at spring training, not just going to games, but just for people listening to the podcast and at home? I mean, what are some of the things that you are paying attention to at this point in the season? Because obviously there's a lot of things that don't matter, but health, position battles, are those the types of things that you're watching specifically?
Yeah, that's a lot of it. And, you know, for the veterans, I don't really care what they do. You know, it's great if, especially, you know, if I've drafted a guy and I see him go deep, that's always very refreshing. But most of the time when I'm out at spring training, I'm looking at the younger guys. I'm looking at the, you know, like Francisco Mejia, guys like that. What are they doing? and how are they putting good swings on the ball, and are they getting, you know, results? Maybe not the one thing you look for, but how are that? What's the process, and how, in talking to them or talking to their manager, how are they progressing? And that's one of the things that I'll do. I'll talk to, when I have a chance to ask a question of a manager, like I did today, ask about Francisco Mejia. Terry Francona says, you know, what we want to see from him is just his ability to catch defensively and be ready for whatever we give him. They're not going to put him out there in third base in spring training like they had him in the Arizona Fall League. They want him to be a catcher. So, you know, things like that. That's what I look for. And whether young guys are able to kind of fit in and look like they knew what they do, what they look like they know what they're doing. That's really what's the most interesting thing to me in spring training is those guys that are developing, maybe more so than the guys that have already made it.
Yeah, is there any coincidence that you bought Francisco Mejia for $11 here in this in this auction? Maybe you know a little something.
Well, I don't know that the $11 that I paid for him. Again, this was one of those late situations toward the end of the draft where I had a little bit of extra money. And in terms of the guys that were still on the board and the upside that was available, I thought Mejia, again, was one of those that could be a huge difference maker. So I went ahead and put he might have been my last guy.
Yeah, you know, so to offer some insight into that, Steve and I, and there, I think there was a third person, we had money. And we were all – like, I actually spent $9 on Juan Nicasio. It's not because I love Juan Nicasio, although I do really like him. We were all doing different things, and I was waiting on Troy Tulowitzki as my last hitter, and I was going to spend, like, you know, $8 on him if he was, you know, the hitter. What I also was trying to do, you know, given the staff I had where the starting pitching was thin, I wanted to get those middle relievers. Like, I wanted to get those guys who, you know, Steve talked about before in the NL, who are going to throw a lot of innings, high volume, good ERA, good whip. And so I didn't spend as much on David Robertson or use Mario Petit as I thought I'd have to. But it's weird, you know, as much as we talk about spending your money, not leaving money on the table, and we agree it's bad, I almost prefer doing that than, you know, being like, okay, I'll spend $15 on a hitter where I already have this excess in hitting and not get these pitchers and kind of settle for lesser middle relievers. Now, I know that there's some variability, and, you know, these relievers I'm pushing for might not be as good as I think they will, but in the moment, I preferred to, you know, express my preferences, and, you know, unfortunately, I left some money behind. But that's just the way it goes sometimes.
Yusmeiro Petit is very real, though. I will say that I'm personally a fan. Steve, your pitching staff. I thought this was interesting because you look at some of the prices on the elite starters on the AL side. You know, your Carrascos, Cole, Severino, Sale. I think Sale went for upper 30s, but you bought Dallas Keuchel at 18 and Masahiro Tanaka at 17. I think that was an interesting price point because you still are going to get pretty nice volume, and for Keuchel, the ratios are going to be fantastic. Tanaka's a guy who I think really underperformed from an ERA standpoint last year based on DRA, which we have at BP. Do you feel good about those two buys specifically, and was that sort of your idea going in, that you were going to target that range of starting pitcher?
I didn't think I was going to target that range. I thought that I would be in play for possibly, you know, Kluber or Carlos Carrasco or somebody like that. But those Kluber and Sale went for 37 and 38 respectively. That's as much as anybody has paid in over a decade in AL labor for a pitcher. I went back and I think I had until back to 2008, and nobody was more than 35, and both of those guys. So this year was definitely the ace heavy AL draft. And when those guys went for that price, it sort of took me aback a little bit, and it seemed like to me that instead of going for the one big ace, that maybe I would go for a couple of secondary aces. And as you know, Carrasco was going for 25 and Severino was 26 and Verlander 24. I was really happy when the bidding stopped at Keuchel at 18. And so I figured I was going to try and maybe take two of those mid-tier, second-tier aces and try and make that work. And that's kind of how I wound up with Keuchel and Tanaka. It wasn't the original strategy, but it certainly looked like the prudent way to go once the other pitchers started going off the board.
Mm. Mike, your pitching staff. I think it's interesting because David Price, not too long ago, was one of those guys who you can envision being, you know, a $30 pitcher, and obviously the elbow is still a concern, but he seems like he's okay, and he's in line to start every fifth day for Boston. Charlie Morton, very good last year. Irvin Santana, I think, exceeded expectations last year. There's a path to a pretty solid rotation here. Did you feel that way while it was coming together?
Well, you know, honestly, and Steve, you know, I know it's hard to remember what everybody else is doing, but, you know, Glenn Cole and Rick Wolf were sitting next to me, and they were amazed not only that I spent all that money early, because, you know, like, Mike, you never spend over this. You say that you never spend over 30 on a player, which isn't quite true. You know, that's a bit of an exaggeration, but I was bidding on pitchers. I bid up to 23 on Craig Kimbrell, who went for 25. I had the last bid on Kluber. I kind of stuck to the idea of, like, I had him at 38. I wasn't going to go to 38, but I went to 36, and I'm like, you know what? If I get Kluber and really go full stars and scrubs, I'll dollar out the pitchers. So, you know, when all that didn't come to – when I also bid 24 on Carlos Carrasco, who Tristan Cockcroft of ESPN got for 25. So when those guys didn't come to fruition – that was when I kind of decided to go with that loose pitching staff. And yeah, I took some risks. You know, David Price at 16, he could be an ace. What I think about Price, the upside isn't going to be like the workhorse Price. It's going to be like 160, 170 innings of a controlled pitcher where the Red Sox at the first sign of trouble rest him or, you know, give him a week off. Charlie Morton's kind of the same thing. He looked great last year, but it's very difficult to envision a scenario where, you know, the Astros give him 200, 220 innings. You know, Irvin Santana will be back late. I think some of this is just the reality of pitching now. Like, not many pitchers are expected to, you know, be that 220 inning workhorse. So there's some value to the idea of, okay, so if I don't have, you know, if I have a pitcher give me 160 great innings, that's still amazing in the context we're looking at today. So if Price returns to form and isn't, you know, it doesn't get to 200 innings, I'm fine with that. And again, that's why I got those relievers. You know, if Price, Morton, and Santana are only good and put up like a 3.6, 3.75 in the aggregate, what I'm hoping is those relievers, you know, pull down those rate stats.
Yeah. I want to get each of your favorite pick that you made and someone that you maybe missed out on that now you look back on and say, oh, I wish I had pushed a little bit more or that you wish you had gotten. We'll start with you, Steve, and then I'll let Mike jump in here.
I think my favorite pick might have been Logan Morrison because he got to me, and when I had a corner infield spot open, it was, I think, later on in the draft, and it was only $14 that he ended up being. Again, I needed some power, I felt like, and the fact that he's going to be playing every day and was only at $14, I thought that was a pretty good buy for me. So I was, if I had to pick one out, I mean, he looks like maybe the best one to me in terms of value.
Mike, who stands out for you?
You know, you mentioned before, but Charlie Morton, I really do believe that the changes the Astros made with him were legitimate and they've unlocked his potential. You know, we know, again, it's the health with him at this point. He could give me only 80 innings. And obviously, you know, even at $10, that's not what I want. But, you know, whether it's FIP or DRA or whatever skill metric you look at, he's skill wise, I don't want to say he's an ace, but he's that next level down. He's a solid 2, maybe even 2A. So I was thrilled to get him at 10. And I know, you know, Ian Osaris, who, you know, is a big pitching guy, right after, you know, the gavel bang, you know, I could tell Ino had that look on his face like, man, I really should have pushed on Morton and, you know, stood by like the courage of my convictions.
Mm. So I had two buys that stood out to me really quickly. I thought Justin Smoke at $17. I thought that was fine. When you look at, like, Joe Mauer went for 11 and Greg Bird for 15, I think if you believe in what Justin Smoke did last year, that's a really nice price. I think Dave Adler of Baseball HQ had that one. And then Andrea Lamont, Roto Lady, who is the one who coincidentally bought Joey Gallo for 28. I thought she had a really nice buy with Brad Peacock at $6. I thought that was I think there's the upside that he gets into that rotation and basically does what he did last year. You look at the health concerns with a lot of the guys for Houston, they're obviously very talented, but there are some real durability concerns there. So I thought that was a really nice buy. And any final thoughts here, guys, before we wrap up?
I'll just say in the American League, second base gets really, it's tricky. And I had a hard time filling my second base spot. And there are a lot of guys out there that are good, but it seems like, you know, the prices for us, I know I was in on Rougned Odor for a long way. I was in on Robinson Cano, and we had, how many of those guys went for 20 or more? That's a good number of them. I guess I can count them up here. Altuve in the 30s, but then D. Gordon for 32, Jose Ramirez 28, Dozier 28, Scope 23, Cano 24, Merrifield 21. It's like, and Odor 20. It's like those guys, you keep thinking, oh, well, I'll just get the next one because it's deep. And you've got to jump in at some point. And that was the tricky thing. I think one of the trickiest things for me in this draft.
Yeah, even a guy like Yoan Moncada for 19, like you had to spend on second base if you were going to get anyone. And I think you ended up, Steve, with Jed Lowry, who, you know,
yep.
Fine player, very professional hitter.
But yes, not what you want. I guess I'll live with him and hope I can make it up elsewhere.
Hopefully he's able to stay healthy. That's the
right.
That's the phrase I'm looking for. All right. So, Steve, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate having you. This is a nice annual tradition, and thank you so much for being here. This was fun.
Hey, thanks for inviting me, and let's hope it turns out like it did last year.
Let's hope not.
For Mike's sake. Absolutely. So I want to let you plug real quickly. I know the USA Today special edition, the Leviathan, as we call it, it is out in stores right now that is available, correct? I think it came out last month.
Though actually we had a special issue of Sports Weekly that was like our pre-spring training fantasy issue, but
okay.
The Leviathan that has all the labor recaps and everything will be on newsstands March 14th. It's earlier this year than it usually is because opening day is earlier. And so after I finish talking to you guys, it's super crunch time because there's a bunch of stuff now because
I was wondering why you were pushing us on those recaps. You're like, I need those by Wednesday. I'm like, wait, why do you need those so early? But now that makes sense.
Yep.
All right, Steve, thank you so much for being here. We'll let you get back to work and enjoy the rest of the time there in Arizona, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
All right. So there you have it, Steve Gardner joining us here on Flags Fly Forever. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll come back and wrap up the show. And we're back. Thank you for listening to episode 162 of Flags Fly Forever. This has been a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. Thank you once again to our guest, Steve Gardner of USA Today Sports. You can follow Steve on Twitter at Steve A. Gardner. You can read us at baseballprospectus.com. Subscribe today with a one-year premium membership. That's how you can read all of our content. We have the Fantasy Positional Series wrapping up. We're on Relief Pitcher Week. Yay, streamers, balloons. Relievers. Let's talk about some spec closers and get excited about Alex Claudio. You can feel the excitement in my voice right now as I talk about Chris Davinsky and Drew Steckenrider and all those Yanni Chirinos. I'm just throwing out some names here. Mike, how excited are you on a scale of 1 to 10 about relief pitchers?
Can I use a negative number?
You can.
Negative 12.
You're on a scale of Ronald Torres to Mike Trout, you are Ronald Torres.
I'm toe. Yeah.
All right. So, yeah, seriously, we have relief pitchers going on. Get excited. But after that, we get into some more preseason-specific content, position battles, injury updates. We'll have sort of auction dynamics. We'll do our auction strategy podcast, which we do every year. That's probably one of my favorite episodes. I don't know who we're going to have on for that yet, but we'll discuss this offline. We'll figure out a good guest, and we'll get somebody good on, because we've had Jeff Quinton on before. The last couple of years we've done it, and he's busy in real life right now. So we're gonna have to get somebody new. We'll see who we come up with, but
I've got a couple ideas. We'll figure it out between on
that. I promise it's gonna be fun. We might do that for next week. We might have Brett back. We'll see. We'll keep you updated on Twitter. We haven't set forth a plan yet, because we wanted to get through the labor drafts and have Steve on, and then we'll kind of reset and get ready for the start of the season, which is coming up right around the corner. You can follow all of us on Twitter. Mike is at Mike Gianella. I am at George Bissell. And that's a good suggestion, by the way. Big fan. That would be a good one. So what else do I have? Subscribe, rate, review us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever you get this podcast. It's on all the platforms, so go out and do that. And until the next show, for Mike Gianella, George Bissell saying thanks for listening. Have a great night.
See you next time.